This is the daily radio ministry of Pastor Sandy Adams of Calvary Chapel Stone Mountain in Atlanta, Georgia. Pastor Sandy is currently teaching through the book of 2 Kings. Today on Sandy Adams Radio, Pastor Sandy will be teaching in 2 Kings chapter 9.
It's kind of interesting. One bad apple does spoil the whole bunch. Let's go to chapter 13. In the 23rd year of Joash, the son of Ahaziah, king of Judah, Jehoahaz, here we are, I knew I was getting to Jehoahaz here, the son of Jehu became king over Israel in Samaria, and he reigned 17 years. After two chapters in Judah, the author now shifts to the northern kingdom of Israel. Jehu is succeeded by his son Jehoahaz, who reigns now in Samaria. And this is the beginning of God's promises to Jehu. You remember in 2 Kings chapter 10, verse 30, God had promised that he would have a son to reign in his place to the fourth generation. Well, here is the first of those sons, Jehoahaz, king of Israel. But we're told Jehoahaz did evil in the sight of the Lord and followed the sins of Jeroboam, the son of Nebat, who had made Israel sin. He did not depart from them. And you remember the sin of Jeroboam. You know, it's interesting. Jeroboam was the one who set up the golden calves in Dan and in Bethel. He was the one who they worshiped God, supposedly, Jehovah God, but they worshiped him through idols, through these sacred images. Jeroboam's sin was the violation of the second commandment, not necessarily the first commandment. Thou shalt not, you know, worship through graven images. And he set up these golden calves and it was the sin that really Israel could never shake. There were 19 kings who reigned over the northern kingdom of Israel, and all 19 followed in the ways of Jeroboam. It is true, one bad apple can spoil the whole bunch. Jeroboam spoiled the whole bunch for the northern kingdom. Notice what happens. Then the anger of the Lord was aroused against Israel, and he delivered them into the hand of Hazael, king of Syria, and into the hand of Ben-Hadad, the son of Hazael, all their days. They were conquered by the Syrians to the north. And so Jehoahaz pleaded with the Lord, and the Lord listened to him, for he saw the oppression of Israel because the king of Syria oppressed them. Then the Lord gave Israel a deliverer so that they escaped from under the hand of the Syrians, and the children of Israel dwelt in their tents as before. Notice this, an unnamed deliverer led Israel in revolt against Syria. For some reason, God didn't see fit to give us the name of this individual. But I am sure that his name was not forgotten in heaven. Here's a quiz. Who can recount the name of the Good Samaritan? Anybody? The name of the Good Samaritan. Well, the reason you can't is because the Scripture doesn't give us his name. He was an unnamed individual. Not everyone who serves the Lord, not everyone who makes a vital contribution to the Lord gets his name mentioned in the credits at the end of the movie. Calvary Chapel Stone Mountain is a classic example. Man, this church functions because of the host of unnamed servants who pitch in and do their part. That's the backbone of our church, the unnamed servants. Hey, understand that not every servant of God, not everyone who makes a vital contribution is going to be known for it. You'll be known in heaven, but not necessarily on earth. It reminds me of the private at the military armory. One day he gets a call from a man who asks him, he says, please give me a count of the equipment that's on hand. The private says, well, we've got 3 Jeeps, we've got 4 tanks, we've got 500 rifles, and we've got a ton of ammunition. And we've got 2 fancy Cadillacs for the fat generals. There's this long silence over the phone, and then a voice says, Private, do you know who I am? No, I'm General Weston. The private says, General, do you know who I am? General Weston says, No. Private replies, See you later, fatty. Well, the moral of the story is there are some advantages of being the unnamed servant. Nevertheless, They did not depart from the sins of the house of Jeroboam, who had made Israel sin, but walked in them, and the wooden image also remained in Samaria. For he left of the army of Jehoahaz only 50 horsemen, 10 chariots, and 10,000 foot soldiers, for the king of Syria had destroyed them and made them like the dust at threshing. Verse 8. Now the rest of the acts of Jehoahaz, all that he did and his might, are they not written in the book of the Chronicles of the kings of Israel? So Jehoahaz rested with his fathers, and they buried him in Samaria. Then Joash, his son, reigned in his place. In the 37th year of Joash, king of Judah, Jehoash, the son of Jehoahaz, became king over Israel in Samaria and reigned 16 years. Now, one of the problems that you encounter when you read 2 Kings, again, is this overlap of names. And that's why you needed that little sheet that gives you the names of the kings. There are two Jehorams on that list. There are two Joashes on that list. There are two Jeroboams on that list. There's different men with the same name, and that leads to confusion. The Joash in chapters 11 and 12 is the king of Judah, the boy king who was hidden by the priest. This king now in chapter 13 is Joash of Israel, the northern kingdom, the son of Jehoahaz. And he did evil in the sight of the Lord. He did not depart from all the sins of Jeroboam, the son of Nebat, who made Israel sin, but walked in them. Now the rest of the acts of Joash, all that he did in his might with which he fought against Amaziah, king of Judah, are they not written in the book of the kings of Israel? So Joash rested with his fathers. Then Jeroboam sat on his throne, and Joash was buried in Samaria with the kings of Israel. This Jeroboam was known as Jeroboam the second. Here's our second Jeroboam. So this is Jeroboam the second. That's what history calls him. He gets named after the northern kingdom's first king, the guy who set up the idols in Dan and in Bethel, and he ends up ruling for 41 years, longest of the kings of Israel. As a matter of fact, history refers to him as one of the more successful kings in the northern kingdom. God was certainly not pleased with him. But before we get to Jeroboam II, an event occurs as a flashback to the reign of Joash. Elisha, contracts a fatal illness, verse 14. Elisha had become sick with the illness of which he would die. Now, we're not given the prophet's age at this point. I noticed one Bible commentary suggested he was 120 years old. But Elisha had been a fixture in Israel for a very long time. He had been a beacon of truth, a beacon of righteousness in a rebellious land. We're told, then Joash, the king of Israel, came down to him and wept over his face and said, "Oh, my father, the chariots of Israel and their horsemen." King Joash pays Elisha a visit. And evidently he expected Elisha to leave the earth as his predecessor Elijah had done, in a fiery chariot. That's why he calls out, "The chariots of Israel and their horsemen." But Elijah doesn't escape death like Elijah. It's interesting, Elisha healed others, but when it came time for God to take him, his illness proved fatal. See, not all of God's servants get healed in this lifetime. Elisha will die, but first God uses him to utter a deathbed prophecy. And Elisha said to him, "Take a bow and some arrows." And so he took himself a bow and some arrows. Then he said to the king of Israel, "Put your hand on the bow." And so he put his hand on it. And Elisha put his hands on the king's hands. And he said, "Open the east window." And he opened it. You see, Syria was eastward. Then Elisha said, "Shoot." And he shot. You know, it was customary to shoot an arrow or to throw a spear toward a country that you plan to invade. And he said, "The arrow of the Lord's deliverance and the arrow of deliverance from Syria. For you must strike the Assyrians at Aphek till you have destroyed them." All this was assurance that God would fight for Israel and that he would deliver Israel from the army of Syria. Well, then he said, "Take the arrows." And so he took them. And he said to the king of Israel, "Strike the ground." So he struck three times and stopped. And the man of God was angry with him and said, "You should have struck five or six times. Then you would have struck Syria till you had destroyed it." But now you will strike Syria only three times. Joash hits the ground three times. He stops. And Elisha gets angry with him. You should have struck five or six times. Then you would have destroyed Syria. But now you will just strike Syria only three times. Won't be a death blow. You'll still have to deal with her. You see, apparently, Elisha could tell that the king's lack of fervor, his lack of passion, was indicative of his attitude. You know, here was a guy that was willing to fight, but evidently not to the full extent that he could. You know, he was willing to fight. He was willing to trust. He was willing to commit, but only to a point. You know people like that? You know people that will strike the ground three times and then give up, but really and truly the job needed five times or six times. This is our problem on occasion. We strike once or twice at the problem, and then we quit. We get sent on the ropes in our lives, and then we let it go. Guys, sometimes we need that killer instinct. If Joash had truly been desperate for victory, he would have smiked the arrow until it broke. But he didn't. He struck it just a few times and then gave up. You know, some of you may remember Bo Jackson. You know, Bo played baseball for the Kansas City Royals. And it was kind of his trademark. Whenever he would strike out, he would take his bat and he would, boom, and he'd break it over his knee. You ever see that? Maybe I was dreaming. I know he did it. I saw it. Thank you, Jamie. You know, whenever he struck out, he'd take that wooden bat, man, and he'd just crack it right over his knee. And I was always impressed with the strength that it took to break a wooden bat like that over your knee. I never took his actions as poor sportsmanship. I took it as determination. To me, it was obvious Bo knows desire. Apparently, that's what Joash lacked. He needed a little fire. He needed a little passion. The king didn't realize that faith has to be persistent. It doesn't just try once and then give up, or twice or three times. Hey, faith keeps pounding until the bat breaks. Well, verse 20 says, "Then Elisha died and they buried him." And notice the terseness of the statement there. The implication is a simple burial rather than a huge state funeral, you know. You know, when Elisha died, he was not given a hero's burial. It was a no-frills kind of a funeral. And the raiding bands from Moab invaded the land in the spring of the year. An amazing thing happens here. So it was, as they were burying a man, that suddenly they spied a band of raiders. And they put the man in the tomb of Elisha. We need to get out of Dodge. Just stick him over there in Elisha's tomb for the time being, and we'll come back and finish your job later. So they put the man in the tomb of Elisha, and when the man was let down and touched the bones of Elisha, he revived, and he stood on his feet. Isn't it amazing? Even after Elisha was dead, his bones were still working miracles. Remember, Elisha had asked Elijah for a double portion of the Holy Spirit. I think he got his request. Verse 22. "And Hazael, king of Syria, oppressed Israel all the days of Jehoahaz. But the Lord was gracious to them, had compassion on them, and regarded them because of his covenant with Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, and would not yet destroy them or cast them from his presence." Now Hazael, king of Syria, died. Then Ben-Hadad, his son, reigned in his place. And Jehoash, the son of Jehoahaz, recaptured from the hand of Ben-Hadad, the son of Hazael, the cities which he had taken out of the hand of Jehoahaz, his father, by war. Three times Joash defeated him and captured the cities of Israel. His three victories fulfilled Elisha's deathbed prophecy. You know, he struck three times. He did win three victories, but that was it. Well, chapter 14 shifts again to Judah and King Amaziah, the successor of Joash. In the second year of Joash, the son of Jehoahaz, king of Israel, Amaziah, the son of Joash, king of Judah, became king. He was 25 years old when he became king, and he reigned 29 years in Jerusalem. His mother's name was Jehoaddan of Jerusalem, and he did what was right in the sight of the Lord, yet not like his father David. He did everything as his father Joash had done. However, the high places were not taken away, and the people still sacrificed and burned incense on the high places. Now it happened, as soon as the kingdom was established in his hand, that he executed his servants who had murdered his father the king. For the children of the murderers he did not execute, according to what is written in the book of the law of Moses, in which the Lord commanded, saying, "Fathers shall not be put to death for their children, nor shall their children be put to death for their fathers, but a person shall be put to death for his own sin." And the scriptural reference there was Deuteronomy chapter 24, verse 16. Now, Amaziah also killed 10,000 Edomites in the Valley of Salt, or in the Dead Sea Basin. And he took Selah by war. Some people think Selah was the rock city of Petra, and called its name Jokthel to this day. Now, according to 2 Chronicles chapter 25, Amaziah's victories over Edom went to his head. Got the big head. He had some minor success, but it made him feel invincible. And he started looking for bigger fish to fry. Then Amaziah sent messengers to Jehoash, the son of Jehoahaz, the son of Jehu, king of Israel, saying, "Come, let us face one another in battle." Now at the time, Israel was this dominant power. Judah was sort of a weakling. Judah was really no match for the northern kingdom of Israel. But it's Amaziah now. He's had these victories over Edom, and now he wants to pick a fight with Israel. And Jehoash, king of Israel, sent to Amaziah, king of Judah, saying, "The thistle that was in Lebanon sent to the cedar that was in Lebanon, saying, 'Give your daughter to my son as wife.' And a wild beast that was in Lebanon passed by and trampled the thistle." Now you get what he's saying? Judah is the thistle. We're talking just a bush. Israel, the northern kingdom, is the cedar tree. And Jehoash warns that Judah is about to be trampled by the northern kingdom, that the cedar tree is about to crush the thistle. Verse 10, "You have indeed defeated Edom, and your heart has lifted you up. Glory in that, and stay at home. For why should you meddle with trouble so that you fall, you and Judah with you?" But Amaziah would not heed. Guys, beware of pride. Amaziah thought that just because he won the Pee Wee Championship, he was ready to take on the Atlanta Braves. He miscalculated. Therefore, Jehoash, king of Israel, went out. So he and Amaziah, king of Judah, faced one another at Beth Shemesh, which belongs to Judah. And Judah was defeated by Israel, and every man fled to his tent. Then Jehoash, king of Israel, captured Amaziah, king of Judah, the son of Jehoash, the son of Ahaziah, at Beth Shemesh. And he went to Jerusalem and broke down the wall of Jerusalem from the gate of Ephraim to the corner gate, 400 cubits. And he took all the gold and silver, all the articles that were found in the house of the Lord and in the treasuries of the king's house and hostages, and returned to Samaria. It was a bitter defeat brought on by a man's pride. Verse 15. Now the rest of the acts of Jehoash, which he did, his might and how he fought with Amaziah, king of Judah, are they not written in the book of the Chronicles of the kings of Israel? So Jehoash rested with his fathers and was buried in Samaria with the kings of Israel. Then Jeroboam, his son, reigned in his place. And it was during the reigns of Joash and Jeroboam II that the northern kingdom of Israel did experience a surge of strength and prosperity. It was, in essence, a final reprieve, sort of the calm before the storm. It was one last period of God's blessing before God's judgment. And it was during this time, by the way, that God sent prophets. Prophets like Hosea. Prophets like Amos to warn Israel of their sin. Jonah ministered to Israel during the reign of Jeroboam II. As a matter of fact, his name gets mentioned here in verse 25. This whole flurry of prophetic warning was God's final call to the northern kingdom of Israel. Verse 17. While Amaziah, the son of Joash, king of Judah, lived 15 years after the death of Jehoash, the son of Jehoahaz, king of Israel. Now the rest of the acts of Amaziah, are they not written in the book of the Chronicles of the kings of Judah? And they formed a conspiracy against him in Jerusalem. And he fled to Lachish, but they sent after him to Lachish and killed him there. Then they brought him on horses, and he was buried at Jerusalem with his fathers in the city of David. And all the people of Judah took Azariah, who was 16 years old, and made him king instead of his father Amaziah. Now imagine, you get your driver's license and you get crowned king in the same year. It's a big year. You know, we've talked about a 7-year-old king, and now we're talking about a 16-year-old king. And quite frankly, after having a 7-year-old and after having a 16-year-old, I'm not sure which one I'd want to live under. Think about that for a minute. We're told Azariah built Elath. Now, he didn't build it into what it is today. You know, Elath is down on the Red Sea, down on the coast, and it has become an incredible resort area. You know, it's the favorite resort area for the Europeans. They all fly down to Israel and they drive down to Eilat and they go to the beach down there. It's beautiful. It's a seaport. It's a tropical resort area. You know, one of our trips to Israel, I'd love to just go a few days earlier and just spin down at Eilat. It's wonderful. Well, Azariah, he built Eilat and he restored it to Judah after the king rested with his fathers. Now, this Azariah, he goes by a more popular name. He's often called Uzziah. And Isaiah 6 makes this statement. Isaiah 6 by saying, "In the year that King Uzziah died, I saw the Lord sitting on a throne, high and lifted up, and the train of his robe filled the temple." But this Uzziah apparently was a contemporary of Isaiah the prophet. And he turned out to be a good king. He turned out to be a godly king. As a matter of fact, he reigned over Judah for over half a century, 52 years. Azariah or Uzziah reigned over Judah. We'll study more about him next time. In the 15th year of Amaziah, the son of Joash, king of Judah, Jeroboam, the son of Joash, king of Israel, became king of Samaria, and he reigned 41 years. That's a long time. And he did evil in the sight of the Lord. He did not depart from all the sins of Jeroboam, the son of Nebat, who had made Israel sin. Again, he followed in the idolatry of his namesake. Well, this Jeroboam II, he restored the territory of Israel from the entrance of Hamath to the Sea of Arabah. In other words, from north to south, according to the word of the Lord God of Israel, which he had spoken through his servant Jonah, the son of Amittai, the prophet who was from Gath Hepher. For the Lord saw that the affliction of Israel was very bitter, and whether bond or free, there was no helper for Israel. And the Lord did not say that he would blot out the name of Israel from under heaven, but he saved them by the hand of Jeroboam, the son of Joash. Now the rest of the acts of Jeroboam and all that he did, his might, how he made war, and how he recaptured for Israel from Damascus and Hamath what had belonged to Judah, are they not written in the book of the Chronicles of the kings of Israel? So Jeroboam rested with his fathers, the kings of Israel. Then Zechariah, his son, reigned in his place. Jeroboam II died in 752 BC. During his reign, Syria was preoccupied with her northern neighbor, the growing Assyrian Empire. And this allowed Israel to prosper for a time. Sadly, though, Israel prospered economically while she was bankrupt spiritually. And it wasn't long before the Assyrians, who conquered Syria to the north, moved down further south and conquered the northern kingdom of Israel in 722 BC and scattered them among the nations.
In today's message, Pastor Sandy continued teaching through the book of 2 Kings. There's the age-old concept of cause and effect. Today's message is just one in a series that touches on the fact that actions have consequences, cause and effect. God gave the people of Israel warnings, and he was willing to follow through with the judgments that would incur. Was this what he wanted? Of course not. God desired soft hearts of repentance, but he was met with stubborn rebellion. What about you today? Is your heart soft toward the things of God, or do you have a rebellious spirit? We trust that hearing these messages is helping things shift in your heart. You've been listening to Sandy Adams Radio with our pastor and teacher, Sandy Adams. Pastor Sandy comes to us from Calvary Chapel, Stone Mountain, located in Atlanta, Georgia. Are you in the area? We'd love to see you on a Sunday morning at 9:15 or 11:15 a.m. For more information, head over to our website, sandyadams.org, and select the About tab. Once again, that website is sandyadams.org. Pastor Sandy brings sound biblical teaching as he goes through the Bible verse by verse. You'll hear the truth loud and clear and learn how to stay true to God when your flesh and heart might be leading you another way. We're so glad you decided to spend your time with us here today. We look forward to the next edition of Sandy Adams Radio.